With me in the studio today is Mark Gordon from Network North. Mark, what is networking?
Networking, right. It's a strange term because I think to a lot of people, Andrew, they associate it with the IT sector, the IT industry, networking two computers or a couple of laptops together. But in essence, in the business sense, or in this particular sense, what we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about business networking. And business networking, in my opinion, is what I define it as a mutually beneficial win-win type of relationship where two people come together to help each other and benefit each other's business and each other's activity.
So is this the same as going to a social event and just wandering around and pressing the flesh, or is it more sophisticated than that?
It's far more sophisticated than that. Yes, I suppose going to an event and pressing the flesh, as you call it, Andrew, is a way of getting to know people initially, but it's developing that relationship from there and building synergy. Mm-hmm. It's a great word, but it starts with meeting somebody for the first time and developing a relationship to the point where you are going to help each other and you're going to benefit each other's business by helping each other introduce one another to their contacts that you know, to people that you've got a relationship already, and you're happy to help somebody else. Now, to do that, I use a phrase called know, like, and trust. Mm-hmm. You've got to know somebody. You've certainly got to like them. But above all else, you've got to trust them. Would you do business with somebody that you don't necessarily like? You probably would in some particular instances. You might have no other option. But would you do business with somebody who you don't trust? And the answer is always going to be no, you wouldn't. So you've got to get to know somebody. You've got to get to like them to a certain extent. But more importantly, you certainly have to trust them. And when you trust them, you're going to introduce them to other people that you already know, people that you already have a relationship with, people that you might do business with, maybe even clients of yours. And that is networking in the truest sense of the word, not to be confused with selling.
Well, yeah, because surely most of the people who would go to networking, I suppose in the opinion of our listeners out there who are in business, would be the guys responsible for sales. Would that be a fair statement?
It probably would, because a lot of people perceive networking as a marketing activity and would do that, exactly that, with that in mind. They would go along to a networking event in the hope that they're going to meet somebody that's going to buy their product. But unfortunately, the vast majority of people who go to networking events don't go to networking events to buy anything. They don't go with a buyer's mentality. So if you're there to sell and your audience isn't buying, you're onto a loser, not onto a winner. And I think once you understand the concept of networking and you understand that that's not going to happen initially and it's going to be a little bit more technically advanced than that, then you'll get a lot from it. You'll get a lot from networking. Just going on that one-hit wonder, hope that they're going to get somebody that's there with a pen and ready to sign your contract or your order or your check, you'll be waiting a long time, I fancy.
Mm. So as a networking virgin, if we have any listeners out there who run their own businesses or are involved in a business, where do they go to find out about networking? Because it's not one of those things that you grow up and walk into a job and somebody says, and by the way, this is what business networking is. I don't think I've ever seen an induction plan that includes telling anybody anything to do with business networking. So where do they go?
Funnily enough, Andrew, there was a guy came to one of our breakfast meetings just a couple of days ago, Wednesday of this week. And as he arrived, he got there at about 7:15, shook his hand, said hello, told him where the coffee was to help the lad wake up, got chatting, and of course, sure enough, it came out in the conversation. He hadn't been with his employer all that long, fairly new. He was only young, 25, 26, fresh out of university, and of course, didn't really understand the concept of networking, and that old line came out, I've been told I've got to get out there, and I've been told I've got to get out and do some networking. And here's the thing, when I said to him, have you kind of thought about what strategy you're going to employ, you know, why you're actually here, what your expectations are, what does success look like for you and your company, there was just a blank expression on his face. He didn't have a clue what I was talking about. And that kind of sums it up, really. You know, get a plan together. If you're going to make the most of networking, it can be a very effective as a strategy. If you're going to try and utilize the networking route, then make a plan. And first on the list is going to be, what type of events do I want to go to? There are lots of different networking events out there, events pretty much every day of the week, from a breakfast to a lunch to an evening type event. And they fall into different categories. I sort of categorize them as three types of networking. Something I call referral-driven networking, where there is an expectation to pass on referrals, connections, introductions. Something else which I refer to as brain building, where you would go along to an event, wander around the room with a glass of Chardonnay or a cup of coffee. Invariably, there's a keynote presentation from somebody, and hopefully you might bump into somebody that you know you can potentially form a relationship with. And the other type of networking is social events, where you're going to do that, you're going to socialise. And if you're good at talking to random strangers and walking up to people you've never met before and saying, "Hi, I'm Terry," or "I'm June, what is it that you do?" then you'll do well in them kind of events. If you're the quiet, reserved, you know, the shrinking violet.
Just like us too.
Don't go to those kind of events because you're going to struggle. Mm-hmm. You'll end up looking like a wallflower stuck in the corner. You'll have the worst time of your life and you'll never go back again. And you'll perceive networking as being a complete and utter waste of time. So the first tip is find out what type of events benefit you. Try them all. You'll find your own level and your own rhythm as you've been to sort of one, two or three different kinds of events. And then take it from there.
Well, I think one of the topics that we're going to touch on shortly is about the attitude and your persona when you go to networking.
Absolutely.
Mark, how do you pick out those that are going to do well at the start of a meeting when they walk in the room? Can you spot them?
Normally, they've got a nice big smile on their face.
But don't you start at 7 o'clock in the morning on some of these meetings?
It's the middle of the night, isn't it?
It is.
For some folk, middle of the night. Not so bad at the moment because it's nice, bright sunshine at 7 o'clock in the morning. But in the winter, it's challenging. It is really challenging when the alarm goes off at 6 o'clock, you arrive at the meeting at 7, and it's still pitch black outside. In fact, when the meeting finishes at about 9 o'clock, it's still pitch black outside. And you do kind of wonder, why am I here? However, you still have to be optimistic and keep a big smile on your face. And I've always kind of adapted this philosophy. To go to a meeting at that time of the day and leave at 9 o'clock, and you're potentially leaving that meeting with a piece of referred business in your hand long before your competitors manage to get their first cup of coffee in the morning, now that in itself brings a nice big fat smile to your face.
And so it should. I mean, some competitors are probably not even out of bed yet.
Definitely. Definitely.
So how do you get yourself up emotionally and mentally to make the most out of these meetings? I mean, it's all one thing to walk in with a smile, but very quickly people's natural characteristics come through. So is there anything you can do to get yourself in the right mindset to get the most out of the meeting?
I think having the right attitude is going to help 110% of the time. And my attitude always is, if you've got to be there, be there. Mm-hmm. Now, that applies to anything in life, whether you're coming to a breakfast meeting, whether you've got to go to some function, or you've got to do something that you don't necessarily want to do, but you know you've got to do it. It's called a commitment. And if you've got to be there, then be there and give it your all. You know, give it everything you've got. Give it the 110% commitment it deserves, even if there's occasions where you could be doing a lot of other things you'd rather be doing. And that applies to all of us, whether you're running a business or whether you're working within a business. And having that type of mindset does help, and it'll bring a smile to your face all of the time. Yes, you might have to work at dealing with some of the challenges that we all go through from time to time and putting them to one side and not focusing on them and try and focus on something positive. There's always somebody else in a worse situation than you. I've always found.
Worst things happen at sea, my grandmother used to say.
Most definitely.
Absolutely. Okay, this is Andrew Charlton in the Lionheart Studio, live from Alnwick, with my guest this afternoon, Mark Gordon from Network North.
Good afternoon, Andrew.
Talking business networking. We've talked about how to get a smiley face and go out and get the most of networking, but I guess anybody out there in business land is going to want to know, how on earth do you get into being a networking organizer? It's one thing to go networking. How did you become a network guru?
A network guru. Well, it started a number of years ago now. It didn't happen overnight. It took me a few years. And I guess, like lots of other people, I was initially invited along to a networking, well, I didn't realize at the time it was a breakfast meeting, but I was invited to a breakfast meeting. It was quite a funny tale, really. At the time, I was working as a sales agent for an IT hardware supply company in County Durham. And, of course, being a sales agent, the traditional methods of sales were telemarketing, knocking on doors, the old sort of hard way of selling. And at the time, I had a bit of a relationship going with a company who supplied software. And I took a phone call one day from this guy, this software company, who said, "Look, have you ever tried business networking?" To which my reply was, "I've never even heard of it, let alone tried it." And he kind of said, "Well, look, why don't you get yourself along to this meeting? 6:30, there's a bunch of people there. They're all there to sort of generate, you know, leads and contacts and introductions and help each other. And I think you'll do well from it." To which I said, "Well, I've got nothing to lose. 6:30, I'll go along. It's tomorrow." So I said, "I'll see you at 6:30 tomorrow night." He said, "No, it's not 6:30 tomorrow night. It's 6:30 tomorrow morning." To which I kind of said, you've obviously got this wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's only one 6:30 in my day, and it's not in the afternoon.
But sure enough, it wasn't, and off I went, and there was five or six people in the room, all with this sort of bleary-eyed, rubbing their eyes, looking for their first cup of coffee of the day, kind of said, you know, this is great, we're all going to do well out of this, and that was my introduction to the concept of business networking. Took it from there, formed a bit of a relationship with the guy who was running the meeting at the time, who kind of said after a few months, look, do you find, he lived up on the Northumberland coast where we are now, and he kind of said, look, do you fancy running a group in Sunderland for me? And that's what I did. I went and started a group in Sunderland, introduced a few of the people that I knew in the world of business, and just took it from there, and found that I had a passion for this, and just kind of developed it from there. And that was 9 or 10 years ago.
9 or 10 years ago. And so in that 9 or 10 years, have you seen any great innovations in networking? What have you seen that's evolved?
I think essentially it would be people's attitude. You know, back then, 9, 10 years ago, because the concept was still relatively unknown, most people in business hadn't heard of business networking, let alone tried it or tried to get their head around the concept of it. So to pick the phone up to somebody and say, look, why don't you come along to this breakfast meeting and get there for 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, normally the phone was put down. And trying to convince people that that's what they should do. I think I once worked out a statistic around about 6, 7, 8 years back, where I was having to contact on average about 80 people to find one person to say yes to come along to a meeting. That's a high number of people saying no.
Yes.
That figure is dramatically less today, because it's generally more accepted and understood that it's something that we should be doing, because it's an inexpensive way of marketing.
I'm guessing when you compare the costs to getting the equivalent number of warm leads or contacts from, I don't know, let's say direct marketing, mail shots, telesales, how does that stack up?
Well, I'm sure we've all been victims of the cold call at some point. You know, it happens in domestic situations. I had one just last week from a company in Liverpool trying to tell me I'd had a car accident in the last 6 months, which I haven't. I've had one in the last 6 years, which I tried to tell the guy who argued with me on the phone. But nevertheless, it was a cold call, and ultimately he was some sort of claims management company. And from a calling point of view, to sort of get, first of all, get beyond the gatekeeper, get to the person that you're trying to speak to, is a challenge. But if you can start your conversation by, I was given your name by XYZ person, you're not just three steps up the ladder, you're halfway up the ladder. Because at that point, whoever it is that you're wanting to talk to is going to make the connection between who they already know and you on the other end of the phone, who they don't know yet, but must be good enough if somebody that they know has told them to give you a call. So therefore, they're willing to listen that little bit further. It's beyond being the cold call. It's probably very, very warm indeed. There's no sort of expectation of business that could be done, but at least they're prepared to listen and take it a stage further.
So in the 9 odd years you've been doing the networking, you must have come across yourself some challenges running a business, which I suppose put you in quite a good place to advise startups and newcomers and people just new to the networking scene. What are the biggest challenges that you faced with your own business?
I guess the traditional challenges are going to be cash flow, marketing, generating sales, admin, balancing that admin time between sort of selling and practical working time. I think probably one of the biggest challenges that a lot of people don't factor in, they think it's relatively easy to become self-employed, but one of the biggest challenges is loneliness. If you start by yourself, invariably lots of people will start a business running from home in their early stages of business. They're going to start working from their back bedroom. And something that you tend not to think about or give much thought to is self-employment can be a very lonely world. There is just you. There's nobody to whinge to. There's no work colleagues that you can share ideas with and share stories with and help each other out through the difficult sort of periods that we all have in business. There is just you. And one of the benefits of joining a networking group or getting involved in the networking arena is it can be a place, as well as generating business and finding contacts and building synergy with folk, it can be a place to meet other people in a similar position to yourself who are suffering from that lonely place, that loneliness that we all have to go through. And you can sit down, and even though you might do something that's completely diverse to each other, some of the feelings that you'll be going through will be the same. And you can kind of bounce off each other and share how you overcome these hurdles and these challenges. So loneliness is definitely a big one in my book. Of course, the biggest challenge as well, and I've heard this said many times now, is that self-employment is the best cure for any illness. In the 9 years that I've been self-employed, I don't think I've had one day sickness. The days where I have been poorly and sick, I've still had to drag myself out of bed and take myself into work, because nobody else is going to do it for you. Your mentality shifts dramatically from being that employee to being the employer very, very quickly indeed. And if nothing else, self-employment is the best cure I've ever seen or ever encountered for any type of illness.
Self-employment for all of Britain, I say.
Absolutely. Why the devil not?
And then national service. Oh. So the loneliness is one issue. That's one of the challenges. And you talked about cash flow and generating your own sales. Mm-hmm. As your business has grown, has that presented problems going from being a one-person business? Because I know there's three or four of you in the team.
Three of us, yeah.
How does that change the dynamic?
I think just managing expectation, you know, having roles within your business, knowing what each other has to do, knowing what is expected of you and what is expected of everybody else. And here's the key one, making yourselves accountable. And a lot of people don't do that. Now, if there's just you and your business and you're self-employed, then again, whether it be networking or whether getting involved with a coach or a mentor or some type of mastermind group or peer group where you can hold yourself accountable, setting yourself some tasks, setting yourself some goals and some aims to focus on, whether that be in terms of sales activity, marketing activity, whether it be simple things like I must do this, a to-do list, managing your time a little bit better, you're managing your cash flow, make yourself accountable. There's lots of things you can do. And that's what we've developed as time has gone on, because obviously ultimately you start to get bigger and bigger as exposure starts to get more and more and more. More people start to know more and more about you. And of course, it's inevitable that it takes a long time to build a reputation, but it takes just seconds to destroy one. And we've seen that many, many times with many folk down the years. So you've got to be ultra careful and you've got to get it right. You've got to get it right.
So we've been talking about getting the right attitude and some of the challenges and some of the issues that you face. How does the economy affect the success or otherwise of business networking?
Honestly.
That's all we do, honestly, on this show.
The worse the economy is, the better it is for networking.
So how can that be?
Because suddenly people realise they've got to get out and do something. They've got to become proactive. And as I've already mentioned, networking is an inexpensive way of getting out there and marketing you and your business. So suddenly, the downturn in the economy, people want to make things happen. They get off their backsides and they get out there and they start to do something about it. And the first place to look is networking opportunities. We saw a huge influx of people jumping into some of our groups round about the end of 09, beginning of 10 last year. And fantastic. And it's continued. And I'm not saying that the economy should stay like this, but from our business, our point of view, the outlook has never been so good.
So have you seen members grow over the last few years?
We certainly have. We certainly have, yeah.
And is that that's a trend that's continuing,
yeah,
even now?
Even now.
So what's your take on the economy, the big picture? Because we hear different statistical indices get published every week that tell us we had negative growth in one quarter, then we see a little bit of growth, we see the RPI going up and down, but the hard facts are that small businesses, which make up, what, more than 90% of the workforce in Britain.
I think if you look at the definition of the SME, the small medium enterprise, it is 85-90% of the workforce. Yeah.
So I'm guessing that SMEs are most of your members are made up of SMEs. What's the vibe in terms of what the economy's really doing with your members?
I think some industry sectors have been hit hard. The construction industry is one that springs to mind. That certainly had a huge impact. But things are starting to come back. Again, we're starting to see people with a smile on their face, people being a little bit more optimistic. It's not all doom and gloom. You know, things are definitely improving. By the same token, when you talk to the financial sector, they're still saying it's a little bit tough, yet house prices are starting to move. Mortgage brokers are starting to enjoy a little bit more success than what they were this time last year. I think across the board, if you look at certain industries, they've seen no change. And for most people, you've got no option. You just got to get on with it. Mm. You can sit in the corner, you can suck your thumb, and you can kind of, woe's me, isn't life awful? Or you can just get on with it and that kind of think, well, you know, let's just make the best of what we have and let's just go out there and make things happen.
So is it true that now is a bad time to start a business? If you're out there, if any of our listeners are out there and they're thinking, I've got this great idea, I'm thinking about starting a business, but look, I'm reading every day that the economy is a bit iffy. Should they still go ahead and do it, start a new business?
There's never a bad time to start a business. The only thing that's going to hold people back is procrastination.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why put off? Why delay? If it's something's worth doing, go for it and do it now. I think a lot of people fall into comfort zones. I was talking with a girl just this morning. She sent me an email yesterday saying that she'd handed in her notice from the job that she'd worked in for the last 8 or 9 years. Good job, well paid. She enjoyed the job, yet her passion was no longer with that job. She'd started a little part-time business over the last 2.5 years, which had started to develop. She'd contemplated for the last 8, 9, 10 months going full-time and making it her full-time business. But, of course, the comfort zone of, I'm going to have to give up my salary, I'm going to have to give up that little comfort, that pay that goes into the bank every month, had prevented her from doing that. But eventually, she's kind of sat down and thought, what the heck, let's go for this. Because one thing I have learned as you get older and as you go through life, you know, decision weighs ounces, but regret weighs tons.
That sounds like a man who's been there.
It probably has in some shape or form, yes.
So is it a prerequisite for a startup that you've got to have something really different in this day and age to stand out? Or are people who are doing the run-of-the-mill mundane stuff still making a go of things?
They are, definitely. Yeah. And I don't think that'll ever change, because In business, as with any industry, people will always buy from people. That's never, ever going to change. And if you're a likeable person, if you're full of integrity, you do what you say you're going to do, even if you've got the most mundane of professions, you can make a great living and you can build a great business if you get out there and get started. Yes, there's a risk factor, as with everything in life. And yes, there's challenges to be overcome, and it isn't easy and it isn't going to happen overnight. But just having the right approach, the right attitude, and here's the key thing, taking massive action will get you there.
Well, massive action, how would you summarise that? I mean, define that when you say massive action. Is that just pushing the go button and getting started, or is it something more than that?
It's a little bit more than that. Pushing the go button is certainly a good starting point, but the first thing you're going to need is a plan. You're going to have some sort of plan. What is it you're looking to achieve? What would success look like for you? If you're just starting out in business, and lots of people, let's be honest, have faced redundancy over the last 12, 18 months, and a lot of people have decided that self-employment is maybe the route they're going to go down. So the first thing is, what is it that we're going to do? You know, what is success going to look like for me? What are my expectations from this? Are they to replace my salary? Are they to get me on the road to where I was or where I need to be in the next 12 months? Whatever it is, get it down in black and white. That's your starting point. And then think about how you're going to achieve that. What is it you're going to do to make that happen? Is it going to be networking? Is it going to be a variety of sales activities, maybe advertising, PR, direct sales campaigns, whatever it may be? Get yourself a plan and then start the action process. Make it come together, make it happen. These days, of course, it isn't just a simple case of I sell tins of beans and opening a shop with your tins of beans on the shelf and hoping that your customers come flooding in the door. You've got to start thinking about websites, branding, image, social media. There's a whole aspect in itself now within a business. Getting all of them fishing rods, if you like, in the pond, getting all your ducks in a row, making sure that you're ready to go and you stick to your plan and stick to your task.
So not wishing to belittle what technology looked like, mm-hmm, 9 years ago when you started networking, but it has changed quite a lot.
It's pretty
dramatically. And you touched on social networking there. How things like that helped your business, hindered it, made a difference?
No, it helped it dramatically, because it's introduced people to the concept of networking. And while some folk think that they can achieve it all online by talking to people on Twitter and LinkedIn and various other social media forums, there's always going to be that face-to-face element. You just can't substitute looking in the whites of people's eyes. Whilst the initial stepping stone to meeting somebody may have come through social media, the rest of it will follow on from the face-to-face, the belly-to-belly meeting. So, yeah, it's had a great impact, a huge impact.
So which of the social media channels do you currently embrace, for want of a better word?
From a business perspective, LinkedIn is the one that I spend the most time on, and Twitter.
So for people out there in business land who are listening to us today, give them 10 seconds, what is LinkedIn? Because it's not one of the common ones that everybody seems to have heard of.
LinkedIn is where you would represent your business rather than you as an individual. Well, compare that to Facebook, where it's you as an individual. Now, I know lots of business people who also have a presence as an individual on Facebook, but they also have a business presence on Facebook, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So they have representation in two forms. I don't. On Facebook, there's just me as an individual. Within my followers on Facebook are friends and family members, as well as some business contacts, whereas on LinkedIn, it's just out-and-out business contacts. I don't have any friends on there, and I don't have any family members on there. And likewise, Twitter's the same. I'm on Twitter as my business name, as I am on LinkedIn. So everybody who gets to see me gets to see my business, and for me, it's exposure. The more people who see the name, find out a little bit about me, read my tweets, and I'll tweet some of the most ridiculous of stuff, not necessarily about what I do and how I can help people. I don't push out sales messages, quite the opposite, in fact. I'll push out messages about what I do in my... I'm a human being at the end of the day, and there's a human side to me, so I'll push out stories and anecdotes about me and my life. And I like to read other people's stories of what they're up to.
There's nothing quite like a bit of juicy gossip.
Absolutely.
What are some of the classic gaffes that you've seen over the years? Have you seen any real howlers? Without naming names.
I think that the biggest faux pas that you can commit would be not doing what you promise. If you meet somebody at an event and you promise to get back in touch with them or go and arrange to have a coffee with them and you don't follow through on that, fatal, because that's going to set the wrong impression in their mind. If you've told somebody you're going to get back to them with a price or a quotation and you don't follow through on that, what sort of image are you creating there? And of course, the old one is doing the work for somebody or having somebody, you know, you've picked up an order from somebody you've met at a networking event, or you've done some business with somebody you've met at a networking event, and of course they don't pay you, or they don't pay you when they say they're going to pay you. That, unfortunately, is just criminal in my book, because the networking arena is a very, very small place, and we all know that bad news travels very quickly indeed.
So, you know, if you happen to be on the receiving end of being let down by somebody you've met through networking, is it considered a faux pas to tell everyone when you're networking that you've had a bad experience? Is there any written rules or unwritten rules on that?
Well, I guess one of the rules would be whatever you don't do, no matter how upset you can be over these kind of things that happen or these kind of mistakes that occur, don't go and publish it on social media sites. So don't go onto Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter and start talking about somebody in particular. That's a big no-no in my opinion.
Okay.
No matter how frustrated you may well be. On a one-to-one basis with other people that you meet, by all means, you know, you're going to spread the bad news, tell people on a one-to-one basis, but don't get onto Twitter, don't get onto Facebook, because that is totally unprofessional.
I guess you're probably making a rod for your own back as well there, because, you know, let's be honest, we've all dropped the ball at some time in our lives.
And we're all human, we all make mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. So the advice would be, well, just front up. If you make a mistake, just be straight about it.
If you've made the mistake and you're conscious of the fact that you've potentially upset somebody, yeah, get on the phone, go and see them, front up, hands in the air, I've made a mistake, I apologise, what can I do to put it right? Normally, people will respond to that in a positive way. If you put your head in the sand and hope that it'll just kind of disappear and the problem will just float off, then invariably, in my experience, it gets 100 times worse. If you get to the point where that point of no return, where you can't go back and you can't redeem yourself, then you just got to kind of hope that it does just kind of drift away and it all gets forgotten about, and the passage of time will make things a little bit sweeter. Don't continue to talk about it. Don't go and upset the apple cart any further. We've all had bad experiences. I know I have, with one or two different things down the years. And whilst I could probably tell you on air who these people were, I'm not going to, and I'm certainly not going to publish them on social media sites. On a one-to-one basis, if somebody wants to buy me a beer, I'd be happy to swap my stories with them.
What would you do if you were Prime Minister? What would you change?
What would I change? Well, there's a tough one, Andrew. I guess there's a lot of things that we all would probably change, ranging from what kind of makes sense to being the most bizarre. But I think from a business point of view, how about lowering the fuel duty?
That's a popular one.
Oh, I think it certainly is. It has a big impact on just about every business owner that I speak to. And of course, it also hits us in our own pockets as well. So how about lowering that fuel duty? How about something that the government, I do know, have talked about, and that is making the first 5 to 10 people or employees of an organisation exempt from national insurance contributions.
That's a great one. That would encourage people to take people on, wouldn't
it? It would certainly encourage a lot of companies to employ more people. And what about this enterprise, the finance guarantee scheme, which is offered by the government and what should be supported wholeheartedly by banks, but aren't? How about getting the banks and compel them to get behind this system and help people with this loan system, this enterprise finance guarantee scheme. It's there for small businesses, and yet the banks are not on board with it.
Love it, love it. Mark for Prime Minister.
Absolutely.
You got my vote.
Vote now.
Absolutely. Okay.